invited the building steward, the union steward from each building, the principal, and I don't remember if there was anybody else from that building or not. Maybe leadership team. No, we didn't have leadership teams at that time. So it must have been the principal and the union steward to a dinner. And we invited Al Shanker to come and speak. So we thought this was... And we also did that one time when we had the entire staff of the Minneapolis Public Schools at the Metrodome. And at the opening of school, had Al come out and speak. The Metrodome was not a great venue in which to try to speak, by the way. But
I can imagine.
And I'm not too sure that the entire staff, including the janitor, engineers, and the bus drivers, totally appreciated it, but nor all the teachers. Anyway, Richard and I kept, you know, kind of plugging along on this with this labor management committee, and one of the activities was going to be a we had started to work. This is about 1985 now. We had started to work with the Panasonic Foundation. Panasonic Foundation had offered to be for us to be one of their sites for their assistance. So we became a Panasonic partner. And one of the first things that I had, well, it might even have been before we had been approved to be a partner. Anyway, I had called David Florio, who had previously worked at the AFT and then moved to the Panasonic Foundation, and said, we want to have a kind of a day-long seminar for principals and union leaders and teacher leaders at a Scanticon, at a conference center, and we want to talk about professionalizing teaching and all of its aspects and site-based management and all that stuff. So could you bring Phil Schlechte in for us? Because I always loved Phil Schlechte, still do. He's, in addition to the, you know, sort of common sense in all of his books on professionalizing teaching, he's also just a really kind of fun, common guy. He'd always come up to Minnesota to fish because he loved fishing. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he always was an interesting speaker and, you know, kind of a rugged, interesting guy. So I thought, well, Phil would probably go over pretty good. So they brought Phil in. We had the day out at Scanticon. And the Panasonic also brought in some principals from a couple other places in the country who were kind of pioneering this work. And after the speech in the morning, everybody was supposed to break out into roll-alike groups. So the teachers went and run one room, principals in another room, and board and administrators in another room. So the principals went in their room and locked the door and wouldn't let Phil and the guest principals in. So they locked the door and stayed in there for a long time. And as far as when they came out, they had made the decision as a group that they weren't going to cooperate with any of this professionalizing baloney. And they were going to resist it. Uh-huh. So that was not a good sign.
No.
So what happened after that then was the group called Five with Five.
Oh, okay.
As a result of that. Okay. So we thought, well, this isn't good. We got to do something about this. So we decided that we were going to start with a little group of principal union leaders, because they were unionized at that time. They were actually members of the Teamsters at that time.
Principals of Teamsters?
Yeah.
Oh, this good?
Yeah. Well, no, it was not a match made in heaven. They had become teachers, Teamsters, because Richard had not given them a raise for 4 years, and they were obviously angered by that. So they thought if they became Teamsters that the Teamsters would, you know, beat him up or decap him or something. I don't know. So anyway, five members of the principals union and five members of the teachers union would meet regularly and try to sort of iron things out and learn how to work together. So it was first of all called 5-on-5. So you can guess who was the, you know, the underling and who was the...
Yeah.
And that first meeting was rather interesting because we were in a conference room at the school board office, and the teachers' union were on one side of the table and the principals were on the other side of the table. And about 20 minutes into the discussion or the attempt at having a discussion, the principal's business agent or whatever they called him, who I always called the junkyard dog, but he said, "We're going to stop. We want a caucus." And I thought, caucus? We haven't even been in the room for 20 minutes yet. But they saw. I don't remember, we left or they left or whatever and caucused. When we got back together again, the issue that they had to caucus about was my body language. They had been upset because I had been sitting there with my arms folded and that was signaling to them that I really, you know, was not open to having an open discussion, that so that if I was going to be a part of this, you know, if this group was going to go anywhere, I had to have more positive body language. I thought, oh, this is going to be a long activity. So that was its inauspicious start.
Yeah, right.
But after, I don't know, maybe a year or so, it became 5-with-5.
Okay.
After we had developed a little bit of a relationship and we decided we were going to recognize each other as equals.
That's very nice.
Mm-hmm.
You're playing nice together.
Yes, we tried to play nice. And then about some years later, it must have been like 5 years later or so, then it became the professional leadership team.
Okay.
When Peter Hutchinson was around. So it evolved from 5-on-5 to 5-with-5 to the professional leadership team.
Do you think the principals were against all this because they weren't really told what was going on? It was the teachers' union and the administration talking and bypassing principals?
Well, I have a hard time being charitable in this discussion, but... I think they did feel that they were being left out. I think it was very obvious that the superintendent and I had, were leading together.
Mm-hmm.
It was very obvious to them that it was our agenda. That was very obvious that we had national opportunities to have national leaders come in, to have a national voice, to become knowledgeable because of the national connections. And I think that they did feel left out. But there has never been a time, well, never is a strong word. Well, there's never been a time in which 25 years, in the 25 years that I tried to lead that professionalism agenda, I never once saw the principals take it upon themselves to go to a conference,
uh-huh,
to go to NSDC on their own, ASDC. We occasionally would invite them to AFT things, and they'd go if we paid for it, or if the school district paid for it. They don't seem to have that national leadership that leads them anywhere. So they are sort of, they view themselves as victims in the middle, and they act as victims.
Right.
And they never, because of that, they can't ever stop being victims, because they can't kind of pull themselves out of that swirling. And the problem with not having any agenda of your own is that you're always just either cooperating with somebody else's agenda or going against somebody else's agenda. And, you know, at some point, if you're not strong enough to go against the prevailing agenda, you're just sort of SOL without one of your own, which they don't have. Still don't. So it's been very difficult, because they see it as power, either loss of power or gain of power. They still, you know, in the old hierarchical structure, they still view title as privilege, and there's a real terrible lack of leadership among the principals now, and in some ways, the advent of having Gen Xers move up into leadership roles has made it worse, because they're unabashedly in it for the money and the title, and heck with the, you know, the skills. So I just still to this day don't have any really good feeling about where that's going. So at various times in our agenda, we have either, and at various times in my own thinking on this issue, I've either tried to do them in altogether and eliminate the role, or tried to help them, you know, develop one and get better at it, and neither one has worked. So we're back at this point to advancing the issue of self-governed schools, where the teachers can basically govern themselves in small schools. And we got a little bit of a language and grant at the legislature the last session to try to do that. But that certainly is not going to change. At other times, I think, well, I know it's history that the AFT pulled away from the NEA because the administrators were running everything.
Right.
And superintendents were telling everybody and leading everything. But maybe it's time we take another look at the British system, or the Canadian system, or the Scandinavian system, where the principals really are principal teachers and they're in the same organization. And maybe that would stop some of the hostility and the hierarchy and the, I don't know.
Sandra said the same thing when I was talking to her about the same issue, what they were doing in New York. She said one of the, not the worst things, but one of the sad things that they did was not allow the principals in when they were realigning, when they were organized. They should have let them in. Mm-hmm. We wouldn't have had a lot of these problems.
Yep.
And she pointed to the Australian system and the English system and all them.
Well, and the problem, and I did have some what we called fireside chats with one of the leaders of the principals union some years ago, and I don't know whether he shared them with anybody or not. I kind of think not, but at that time we sort of talked about it.
Yeah.
And we talked about it at some length on several occasions, but then he retired and then nothing happened.
Yeah.
But, and it, you know, it may be too late now, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But it's the, we started a leadership training program with the principals' union, with a higher ed institution, with Minneapolis and St. Paul federations and Minneapolis and St. Paul school districts, and all those people in the room, and we thought we were creating a wholly new a leadership program and training program and licensure program where the folks that would, you know, graduate would be, would have those skills. We'd know what skills they had. We would have observed what skills they'd have and that they'd be ready to hit the ground running. And for various reasons, it didn't work. So if we're ever going to try it again, I hope we learn something and maybe we can try it again. But it's very hard because there aren't any inclusive processes anymore in the district on how you choose, how people get to be an intern, assistant principal, how they get to be an assistant principal, or how they get to be a principal. There used to be processes and committees and things that you did. Now it's just all in the hands of a couple of downtown administrators and they make all the decisions.
Right.
And it's crazy. They just, for one thing, they don't know.
Right, you don't know who you're getting, they don't know. And
it's based on issues that maybe shouldn't be based on. So it's and also the administrators have as their set of standards 23 indicators, 23 sets of indicators as to whether that they are supposedly supposed to pass in order to be an administrator and in order to stay an administrator. 23 standards is too many.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, people sort of don't get good at any of them. Plus, collaborating and leading other leaders, collaborating with teachers and other professionals isn't one of them.
Right.
So,
right. Of course not.
Of course not. So they're being prepared for actually a job that doesn't exist anymore. So they still spend a semester sitting in a class about school law. There is no reason why they have to sit through a semester class on school law because they're told by the district, if anything happens in your building, pick up the phone and call the attorney.
Yeah, exactly.
So they spend a semester in a school law course knowing all kinds of stuff that they probably could have had in a seminar.
Mm-hmm.
And they spend, you know, all these classes doing I don't know what, but instead of sort of getting these skills on how you lead a group of highly skilled, highly educated professionals and get them going in one way, how do you lead them into a process about developing, you know, the school goals? How do you lead them in a process to decide how you're, you know, achieving, whether you're achieving your school goals or not? How do you lead these professionals, the majority of whom have master's degrees? They're skilled in their grade level and in their subject matter. And the only thing that, you know, they revert to is power and authority and threatening and...
They still want the blinds, even.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, they do... The most often thing that happens now is the kind of intimidation where if a teacher has been teaching kindergarten for 16 years... And a principal wants to get rid of them out of their building, they move them to sixth grade the following year, for the following year, mm-hmm. and say, if you don't like it, bid out.
Mm-hmm.
So there's lots of unhealthy things like that that go on.
Okay. Let me just stop it real quick. Okay, we're back.
And I forgot to say that the reason that I... also, the other reason why I became president in 1984 is that the the teachers were really upset by the betrayal of the contract, and they really didn't, you know, teachers really want to teach, and they don't want to have the constant roiling and broiling and all of the hostile back and forth, and the majority of them just want to teach and not be sort of constantly upset by all of the external things mm-hmm. from their classroom. So when Shanker made his 1985 press club speech about a nation at risk and how we should respond, and all of the components of a professional model that he outlined in that speech, it's really amazing when you go back and review that speech about all of the parts of the professional agenda that he hit that mm-hmm. we actually accomplished. And in it was the National Board certification and standards and all the rest of that stuff. So we developed our own set of our own professional agenda. We didn't have it all laid out at the beginning, but we, in some ways, systematically kind of ticked off the and developed a labor management committee on the mentor program, and then we did a professional practice school at Henry High School, because I had been a part of a AFT task force on professional practice schools. When we got a grant from the Exxon Corporation to try out in three locations a professional practice school, we got one of those grants, and that's been going on ever since at Henry High School.
It's still going on.
Still going on.
Can you explain what a practice school is?
Gasping, but it's going on. Because it's obviously easier to induct people when you're hiring than when you're laying off.
Right.
But a professional practice school is an induction, kind of a full-scale induction activity in which you bring in pre-student teachers, student teachers, we call them baby teachers, and the teachers who are student teachers, and the intern teachers from the university, and the first-year teachers, all the probationary teachers, and then some of the career teachers, and then some of the on-site mentor teachers. And they all have this kind of wonderful professional discussions and community. And that, as I said, that there were lots of them when we started the induction program. And one of its keys is that for the very first year, they are a resident teacher. And it's modeled, of course, after the medical model. And the first year of your teaching, if you're a resident, you teach 80% of the time, and you continue your professional development 20% of the time under the tutelage and assistance and coaching of a really good mentor teacher at the site. So you meet regularly, you work on your portfolio, you work on the skills in your classroom, you work on all of the things that it takes to be a really good teacher. And after that year of residency, everyone, including the principals who have been a part of professional practice schools or residency sites, say that those teachers are the best teachers that you can possibly find.
Excellent.
Because of that year of induction. Now, we also expanded that to district-wide. We started the achievement of tenure process. And the achievement of tenure process, I'm going to go back to, you may have to remind me, but the next part of the professional agenda was peer review process. And in Minneapolis, I guess I made the calculated decision not to ever call it peer review. So we called it the professional development process, or the PDP.
Right.
And we started it with a little in 89 as a little memorandum of agreement that said we're going to have a joint labor management committee that will include district administrators and teachers and community people to evaluate the current teacher evaluation system and to make a report and come up with something new. So the one thing that I think I did really well in most cases in my career is find really good teachers to lead teacher programs. And so I was lucky enough to find Lynn Nordgren, who has developed, researched, brought that committee to then develop the what I call a pervasive peer review system, because it's a peer review system in which following the systems of quality management is ongoing, it's constant, it's all the time. It's not every 4 years, whether you need it or not, somebody pops into your classroom and takes a look at your best lesson and pops back out again. This is a constant conversation with your colleagues. You do an action research project every year. You reflect on it. You have colleagues come in and observe your classroom, and that's all this constant activity. When we then decided that the probation years needed to be beefed up somewhat, and I happened to have been at Queens College and the Queens International School in, obviously, Queens, New York, observing one time, and they were talking about their plan at the Queens International School to beef up the tenure process. So that got me thinking, and I came back, and we laid on the negotiating table. We brought to the negotiating table the what became the achievement of tenure process. And I'm the only one on the face of the earth that insists that it's the A from achievement and the F of and the T of tenure all be capitalized. A-F-T, get it?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
So I think it's probably going to be a lost cause now that I'm gone. But the achievement of tenure process,